Yeah. Another one is to try and communicate well with other people when things happen that annoy us. Okay? In other words, instead of jumping to conclusions about what other people think, or jumping to conclusions about what their motivation must be, yeah, stop a little bit and ask ourselves, do I really know what somebody else was thinking? Do I really know what their motivation was? Or am I just assuming, because they said this, that, and the other thing, that that's what, you know, that they must have had a certain motivation? Because I think very often conflicts happen because we think we know what's going on somebody else, but we don't have a clue. And somebody did something for one reason, and we interpret it in the wrong way, and then quarrels ensue. So very often, checking out with the other person why they said or did what they said or did, you know, can clarify the situation for us. And so we ask it as an open-ended question, you know. We don't say, you were late for the appointment, why were you late for the appointment? Because, I mean, already, what's that saying to somebody? Okay? But if we just say, you know, I thought we were meeting at 6 o'clock and, you know, you came at 6:30. Was there some reason for that? What happened? Then we leave it open and the other person can explain. Yeah. So without our jumping to conclusions, they don't trust me, they aren't considerate, you know, just ask them what's going on. Because many, many times, when people are quarreling, they think they know what they're quarreling about, but they don't. Okay? And an example I always give in this is when I was a teenager, I didn't get along very well with my parents. Okay? I wanted to be more independent, yeah? And my parents wanted me home by a certain time. They didn't want me to stay out too late. And I had to be home by a certain time, and if I was going to be late, I had to call before that time, and I wasn't allowed to go different places. And I felt that this was so constrictive, because I felt, wait a minute, I'm a teenager, I can run my own life, I'm independent, I'm autonomous, you know. Why are my parents trying to control me? They're trying to stop me from being independent. Okay. So I would get really upset about that, and sometimes, you know, there would be a lot of tension with my folks. So I thought that we were quarreling and about my independence and autonomy and their control of my life. To me, that's what the issue was about. And it wasn't until years later, after I became a Buddhist and started doing some meditation, and started thinking, if I were my parents, what would the issue be for me? Those of you who were parents, what do you think the issue was for my parents? What do you think that the thing that they thought was important, that they were quarreling about? It was safety, wasn't it? Yeah? They're looking at their child, and they were caring about my safety and not wanting me to be in dangerous situations. But as a teenager, I couldn't see that. I thought we were fighting about my independence. They thought we were fighting about my safety. Okay? So I thought they were overprotective and too controlling. And they thought that I was reckless and stupid. Because we were fighting about two different things, and we didn't realize that we were fighting about two different things. Each of us thought that we were fighting about the thing we were fighting about, but we weren't. Okay? So in many situations like this, when we aren't getting along with somebody else, it can be very helpful for us to go around and look at the situation from the other person's viewpoint. and think, if I were the other person and I grew up in their culture, at their time, you know, in history, with their family background, with their kind of personality, if I were that person and looking at this situation, what would my needs and concerns be? And sometimes when we do this, stepping around and trying to become the other person, sometimes we realize that what the other person's needs and concerns are in the situation is not at all what we thought they were. That we were totally misreading their motivation. Okay. Sometimes when we do this, we realize that we don't have a clue how they're looking at the situation. That we thought we did, we thought we knew their motivation and their interest, but when we look, we realize we don't have a clue. And when we see that, that means that we need to go to the other person and say, you know, when this and this happens, or in such and such a situation, what is it that is your interest? What is it that you're needing? And when we ask the question, then we have to be quiet and listen. And really try to listen with our heart to what the other person's needs and concerns are. Because sometimes, you know, we really don't have an idea. I remember not too long ago, just a few months ago, I was not getting along with a very good friend of mine. And I couldn't figure out, you know, he was being very cross, very uncooperative, very critical of me. You know, it was all his fault, right? Yeah, I mean, I was just nice and sweet and good-natured, and he was cross and critical. I couldn't figure out why he was like this. And it kind of got to a certain point where we really weren't getting along very well. And we decided to sit down and talk. And I said, what's going on? You know, what's happening inside of you? And as he began to talk, he said that something that I had said before, he had interpreted as criticism. And he had felt very hurt by something that I had said. Now, when I made the remark, the remark I made with the intention to help him, okay, but he couldn't see my motivation, and he was sensitive about certain things. So to him, a remark that I made with the motivation to help came across to his ears as me criticizing him. And so he felt put down, he felt disrespected. And so, of course, he was being very cross with me. And this was like news for me, because I didn't know that what I had said had affected him in this way. I didn't want it to affect him in that way. So we needed to backtrack, and I needed to explain to him why I said what I did, and apologize because it had hurt him, even though I didn't want to hurt him, to let him know that I had no intention of hurting him. And once he was assured of my goodwill, then of course his goodwill returned. So I think this is a very good example of how sometimes when we're quarreling, we really need to ask the other person, you know, how the situation looks to them and what's going on inside of them, because this kind of misunderstanding can it happens all the time. It happens very, very easily. And if we don't take the time to talk to the person involved, you know, very good relationships can be ruined. And I really emphasize this, trying to communicate with the person that we're having the conflict about with, because generally when we have a conflict, who do we talk to? If I have a conflict with Susan, okay, I usually talk to everybody else but her. Isn't it? At your work, if you don't like a colleague, if you have something going on with a colleague, Do you go and talk to that colleague, or do you talk to everybody else in the office and criticize how nasty that colleague is? Okay? I mean, it's incredible when you think about it, because the person we're having the quarrel with is the one we need to talk to. It's often the last person we want to talk to, because we're so sure that they are nasty and they are mean and they don't understand us and they're evil and horrible. You know, we're so sure that we don't even try and improve the relationship. And instead, what we do is we badmouth them behind their back to everybody else around. True or not true? Anybody here who hasn't done that? You're all going to say, oh, I always communicate. Well, it's all those other colleagues in my office. They do this to me, but I'm very sweet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a friend of mine, he does mediation and conflict resolution workshops. And he says, you know, he gives people like an inventory to fill out at the beginning of it. And he always points out to them that it's always the nice cooperative people who come to the workshop, but the people that they have conflict with never come because they're such idiots. Yeah. I mean, this is it, isn't it? We always feel in a conflict, I'm sweet, I'm innocent, I mean well, I didn't do anything wrong. You know, it's this other person who's jumping to conclusions and being mean and nasty. Yeah, and they're so mean and nasty that I don't even want to talk to them. So I talk to everybody else about them behind their back, which of course makes the conflict worse, doesn't it? Yeah? If you ever want to inflame a conflict, go talk about that person behind their back. Sure way, yeah, to make the conflict worse. And I think it's really funny that we often don't go and talk to the person concerned, because something inside of us is afraid that if we do, we might have to own up to our part in the conflict. And we don't always feel comfortable doing that, do we? It's much easier to just blame the other person. Okay. But, you know, if we just go through life and blame the other person and sign people off, like, okay, have this example. Let's say when you're born, you're in a room, and you're in a room with all people on the planet. And every time you have a quarrel with somebody, you kick that person out of the room because they're evil and nasty and mean and you don't want to talk to them ever again. By the time you're 60 years old, how many people are going to be inside the room with you? Yeah, we're going to be all alone. And it's not because those people left, it's because our critical judgmental mind kicked them out, and because we labeled them, you know, awful, horrible, whatever, and kicked them out. And we didn't try to improve the relationship. We didn't try to make the conflict decrease. So we just go through and keep on blaming the other person again and again and think, oh, poor me, I'm so nice, it's all their fault. But, you know, how can, after a while, it's boring, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, and it's lonely. If every time somebody does something we don't like, we kick them out of our lives, you know, we're going to be pretty lonely. So that's why I say that when there's a conflict, we really need to talk to the person we have the conflict with, not talk with other people. Mm. Unless, of course, we go to a friend and we, instead of talking about what the other person did, we talk about what we did. And we're willing to own up to our share in the conflict, you know? Then when we do so, when we talk to somebody, if we can admit what we've done and forgive them for what they've done, then there's a chance for resolution. Okay? So, good communication, another thing. Another step for improving relationships is forgiving. Yeah. Now, there's a lot of misunderstanding about what forgiving means. there's often the expression forgive and forget. I don't really agree with that, because I think there's some things we should not forget. There's some things that if we remember, we learn from, and then we don't do them again. So I don't think that forgiveness means we forget about things. And I don't think forgiveness means that we say what the other person did was okay. You know? You beat me up, oh, it's okay, no problem. I forgive you. No, that's not okay, somebody beats me up. Yeah? That is not good behavior. I can't say that's an okay action, but I can forgive the person for doing it. Okay, so forgiving somebody simply means that we stop being angry at them. When we stop being angry, who is it that benefits? When we forgive somebody and let go of our anger, who is it that feels happier afterwards? We do, don't we? Don't we? Sometimes the other person isn't even around to forgive, but the moment we let go of our anger towards that person, instantaneously our own mind is relaxed and happy. So forgiving simply means that we let go of anger. We can still say what somebody did was wrong or inappropriate or harmful, but we can stop being angry at it and stop being angry at them. And I think this is really, really important, especially in families and in all relationships, actually. I say this, and some of you have heard me tell this story before, because I come from a family in which, for generations, people don't speak to each other. Yeah. And it's very problematic when somebody in the family gets married and everybody comes and you're trying to make a seating arrangement for who sits at the table with who, because this one doesn't speak to that one but does speak to this one, but that one doesn't speak to that one and this one doesn't speak to this one, and oh, but just 2 weeks ago that one stopped speaking to this one, but you thought they could sit at the same table, now they can't. You know, it's like impossible. And I just remember as a child, because my family had, you know, the extended family had some, like a small house that they went to in the summer. You know, there were some small buildings on a piece of land where they went to in the summer. And I remember as a youngster being told, because there were four different apartments there, and being told, you don't talk to the people who live in that apartment. You know, they were our relatives, but you don't talk to them. You know, because somehow on the level of my grandparents, something happened. You know, on that level of the generation, brother or sister, somebody didn't get along. I don't even know what happened. But anyway, I was descendant of one grandparent, and the people in that flat were descendant of the other, so I wasn't supposed to talk to them because of something that happened to our grandparents, I don't know how many decades ago. Okay. And then I watched, you know, some years went by, and then my parents' generation, my aunts and uncles, because when I was a kid, all my aunts and uncles spoke to each other. Well, as I grew up, then this aunt didn't speak to that uncle, and that uncle didn't speak to this uncle, and this one didn't speak to that one. And I'm going, ugh. You know, that's no fun. I like to see them all together, but I can't see them all together because who knows what happened. Again, I don't know all the stories, but they decided they weren't going to speak to each other. And then some years went by, and I started seeing on my generation with my cousins how different cousins would get mad at each other and not speak to each other. And I thought, my goodness, you know, what are parents teaching their children? Yeah, when you don't speak to somebody else in your family, you are teaching your child not to speak to their brother and sister. Yeah, if you don't speak to your brothers and sisters, you are setting an example to your children that they shouldn't speak to each other when they're adults. Yeah? Is this what you want to pass on to your kids? I don't think so. Yeah? And if we talk nasty about our cousins or our aunts or uncles, you know, and of course the kids hear it, we're teaching them that they should talk nasty about their cousins and aunts and uncles. Yeah? See? You see what happens when we do that? Yeah? We don't want to cause misery to children, do we? So we need to set a good example. And I think this is really, really important in families. Yeah? Not to talk nasty about each other behind each other's back. And even if you don't like a brother or sister or an aunt or uncle, even though they're not your best friend, try at least to be polite to them. Yeah? Try to find something good about them, because they might also be trying to find something good about you. Yeah? So, you know, just think about it a little bit, because especially those of you who are parents, you know, what you do acts as a bigger lesson to your kids than what you tell your kids to do. Yeah. So you have to set a good example.